just let me know when we're good to go.
Chandler, tell her we're good.
We're good. I heard from the door we're good.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to call our work session to order. Today is Tuesday, November 17th, 2020. It is 6:01 p.m., and we are meeting electronically tonight. Let's see. Looks like we have two items on our agenda for the work session. The first one is the health department presentation. So, Ralph, I will turn the time over to you.
Well, thank you, Mayor. I appreciate the opportunity to have a few moments of your time, and I appreciate so much the work and service that you give to our citizens in the Cedar Hills area. I know it's sometimes a thankless job, and I know it doesn't pay real well, but somebody's got to do it, and I appreciate the fact that you've chosen to do it, and you have my kudos. You know, each April, we generally take, during Public Health Week, an opportunity to recognize an organization and an individual, or two organizations or two individuals, depending on the year, as friends of public health, into their efforts in helping with public health processes in the county. Not all of public health is done by the public health department. In fact, most of it's done by community organizations, healthcare, and others who reach out and try to help others and find ways that our communities can be healthier. But with April, our thoughts and concerns were someplace else, I guess. And so, you know, with COVID, things have really tied us up. But we didn't want to go through the end of the year without doing this, even though COVID still dominates our time. But perhaps I can just read this, and then be happy to answer any questions that anybody has, if I can, as well. So, in 2018, the Utah County Health Department staff conducted a local opinion leader survey to assess local needs around substance abuse prevention and presented the results and provided education to key elected leaders in Utah County. Mayor Jenny Reeves was one of those leaders. Both the state and county were experiencing an alarming rise in youth vaping rates, and we presented on how local opinion leaders could help be a part of the solution. One of those solutions was raising the minimum purchasing age for tobacco from age 19 to 21. Very few adults will begin using tobacco products after the age of 21. The meeting after the meeting is always where the rubber hits the road. One legislator told some of our Utah County mayors that if we wanted Tobacco 21 to pass on a statewide level, first the cities would need to pass Tobacco 21 on a local level. From there, the ball started rolling and meetings were conducted with several Utah County cities. Mayor Reeves met with you, the city council, and together you passed a Tobacco 21 ordinance on a local level in your city. Cedar Hills became the second city in Utah County to pass a Tobacco 21 ordinance in February of 2019. Even after the ordinance was passed by the city, Mayor Reeves spent many hours attending multiple meetings with state legislators during the legislative session, testifying during committee meetings and reaching out to multiple legislators to gain support for a statewide Tobacco 21 law. During the 2019 legislative session, the minimum age to purchase tobacco in Utah was set to 21, to be gradually raised over the succeeding years. The passage of this state law, along with similar laws passed in other states, led to the federal discussions to raise the federal age to 21. With much support from Utah's representatives. On December 20th, 2019, the president signed legislation raising the federal minimum age for sale of tobacco products from 18 to 21 years old. During the 2020 Utah legislative session, the minimum age to purchase tobacco in Utah was raised to 21 to immediately match the federal law rather than to follow the phased-in process. Tobacco prevention and control took a huge leap forward thanks to the efforts, courage, and determination of Mayor Reeves and the city and the Cedar Hills City Council. As the Utah County Health Department Board of Health, we want to present to the Mayor and the City Council of Cedar Hills a Friend of Public Health Award for the integral role you played in raising the age to purchase tobacco to 21 years of age in Utah. Thank you. And you can clap for yourselves, by the way. But here's the the award that we'll get out to Mayor. And then, Mayor, I just asked that maybe you'd have a picture taken with that and send it to me so that'll keep my PIO happy. And if my PIO was not happy, none of us are happy. So, that's an important thing to have. But again, thanks to you for all those efforts. And it wouldn't have happened without those types of efforts from the cities here in Utah County that kind of led out in this. And I appreciate that leadership and the difference it made. It really did make a difference in getting Tobacco 21 passed.
Well, thank you, Rob. I appreciate that. And we'll definitely get a picture and send that over to you. As you mentioned, the city council worked with us. This was a great effort on behalf of not just the elected officials in Cedar Hills, but we had community support for this as well, which was great. As you probably are aware, our commercial zone is right across from a high school, and so this was a concern for many in our community. And so working with Mayor Johnson and with our city council, we saw this as a wonderful opportunity to move forward on something that was really important to us and to the citizens of Utah County. So thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Anything that the council wants to weigh in on? Maybe Ben. No.
I appreciate the recognition. It was a very interesting process to go through. Glad we were able to help.
Well, you're very deserving, and thank you for leading out on the efforts.
All right. Thank you, Ralph. You are welcome to continue hanging out with us if you'd like, but I'm sure you've got many, many things on your plate.
Very good. Thank you. I'll talk out so you can continue the discussions.
All right. Thanks, Ralph. All right, we will move on to our next agenda item then, which is a public-private fiber project presentation by, is it Strata or Strata?
Strata.
Strata, yep. Okay. Yep. And Tyler, are you making that presentation?
Yeah, we've also got Dave on the line here too, so we'll be tag teaming. Okay. Join Dave Ryan. If you're ready for us, we'll jump right in. I believe Chandler was gonna share the proposal on the screen. So that we have something to reference there. I'll just do a quick tee up, quick introductions, and then we'll run through this proposal at a high level and allow you guys to direct our time so that we best utilize the time that you have tonight and address the questions and concerns that you might have. So appreciate it, Mayor. Once again, my name is Tyler Rasmussen. My capacity here at Strata Networks is business development, marketing, public relations. We've also got Dave on the line, Dave Ryan. We will allow him to introduce himself as well. I've been here with the organization for about 17 years, and I'll give you just a little bit of background about Strata, which you'll find some of this on the first few pages of the proposal, Chandler. If you want to scroll down just a little bit, maybe folks can follow along. So Strata, we're headquartered in Roosevelt, and we've been in business for over 65 years. We are a cooperative, which is a bit of a unique organizational structure, probably in your world, but that means that we basically started as an organization that is owned by the customers that we serve, originally serving some of the outlying areas with telephone service, and over the years we've added new geographic service territories and added many layers of technology and services that we provide. As you'll see there in the summary, we just recently surpassed our 9,000th fiber location connected to our gigabit-capable fiber network. We are unique in that we also have our own wireless cellular network here in the Uinta Basin and throughout the Intermountain states around Utah. And as you might assume, we also have television and voice services. So, a couple other things to mention and size and scope of our organization. We've got just under 300 employees that are headquartered here. We do have our own 24/7 365 network operations center. We also have a fully redundant and very robust data center located in Vernal, which is a prime and wonderful location for a data center as far as climate and minimizing any natural disasters that could occur, so it's a great location. We do have some carrier aggregation switching services through another consortium and subsidiary that we are the majority owner of. And the these other elements that we mentioned here, we just mentioned because they can be helpful for cities as you start thinking about a fiber deployment strategy and messaging and marketing. So we do obviously also own a media production company, which is called B6 Media, also headquartered in the Uinta Basin in Vernal, actually, and have a full suite of marketing services with a staff of probably 12 individuals that are supporting our efforts as well as the media production company's efforts. And then another subsidiary company called Spectra Services that handles managed IT services and telemetry, which they're working with a lot of clients that are very similar to you as a city organization in providing a whole suite of services. So that's Strata kind of in a nutshell. We do have, which we'll talk a little bit more about this, but we do have a very robust network with connections into Salt Lake City and a connection also into Denver, and a good chunk of our network, obviously, between those two locations, with kind of the main nucleus of that network existing here in the Uinta Basin. Before we go any further, maybe let's let Dave do a quick introduction. Dave, do you want to dive in and introduce yourself?
Sure. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for letting me be here. Tyler did a great job of going over who we are as an organization. I'll just briefly tell you where, you know, what my role is, and then we'll let Tyler continue on. But Dave Ryan, I live here in Roosevelt as well. I've been with Strata for a little over 20 years. My role currently is managing the engineering and construction and warehouse and procurement and land access, rights of way, permitting, easements, things like that. Those groups report through me. And specifically, as it pertains to these projects, Tyler and I have kind of taken a joint project lead role on these municipal fiber projects. So that's kind of who I am and some of the folks that I work with. And we can dive into more of that, or unless there's any questions or anything you want to ask now, I'll let Tyler continue.
Yeah, so I think to cut right to the chase of kind of the call out of our message tonight is that we have been working over probably the last 12 months in response to some inquiries that we started to receive from similar municipalities that were looking for some alternative solutions. So some of the common indicators that we're seeing with municipalities is first and foremost, a lack of adequate fiber-based broadband services in municipalities that's restricting or acting as an impediment to some critical functions, whether they be economic development or healthcare services or education or just business expansion and growth. So that's kind of a common denominator that I'm sure is not unfamiliar to you guys. The second piece is that Utopia, which is an organization we're all fairly familiar with, has a model that allows cities to, you know, work on providing a ubiquitous citywide fiber solution to respond to the problems that I previously described. However, we have found from some discussions and inquiries that have come over the course of the last year that there are many cities that are interested in some alternative options to the Utopia model, namely an option that allows cities to not just hold the burden of the debt of the network investment, but also have the opportunity to be rewarded by the upside, the potential upside, or the net margin that comes in with the risk and investment of a citywide fiber network. So the model or the proposal that Strata has delivered to you and several other municipalities is one that allows you to study this as an option and decide if this is the right thing for your community financially and politically. And if you feel that it is, it allows you to move forward and own the network and have the opportunity to once again not only hold the risk, but have the opportunity to take the upside of that investment, the reward utilize those additional funds to expand the network or to utilize those funds in other areas that the city might need to use those in. So that's kind of the crux of our kind of the main tenet of what we're offering. The proposal that we provide is also very similar to what you'd see with Utopia in that it's a gigabit, multi-gigabit capable network. There are several different variations of the model that we can provide that are either subscription-based, meaning we pass every home in the city, but we only deliver the drop or the connection from the street to the home to those locations where you actually have a subscriber. That's one option. And the alternative option that many cities are considering is a utility model where all locations receive the connection to the network and subsequently have the opportunity to take advantage of the connection. The utility model that we're suggesting does come with a minimal fee and correspondingly a minimum level of service that could be delivered at every location that would be included with that fee. So I think from there, Chandler, we can maybe start to scroll down. I've just captured here on what you're seeing on the screen, we've captured some of the factual points that have come out from previous survey findings that you've already conducted. They should be familiar to you. And then some of this portion down here below I've already addressed. I have not mentioned another critical tenet that the network would be open access, meaning that we would recruit ISPs to function on the network and citizens or residents and businesses would have the opportunity to choose from multiple providers, just like they do on the Utopia network. So I think that is kind of the high level of this particular page. Dave, anything specific you'd want to mention there as well?
I think you've said it, Tyler, but just to clarify, so Strata's role in this would be to act as a design and construction entity and then roll in as a network operator for the city, basically as like a contracted network operator for the city's network that the city would own. And then the internet service providers would be recruited to provide the services to the customers on the network, which Tyler did mention. So just wanted to kind of clarify that as well.
Yeah, so this next page is basically just an outline of what we provided. It's a proposal that's a public-private partnership proposal, and we're providing it to you unsolicited, which allows you to consider it. And our intent within this proposal is to give you like a baseline, an understanding of kind of a high-level perspective. And then from there, if there's further interest, we would love to work with you on tweaking the model and adjusting the inputs to suit your particular preferences. So as I mentioned previously, there's significant differences in cost and financial implications as well as political implications depending on whether you choose to consider a subscription-based model or a utility model. Those are some of the high-level things that we would need to discuss and determine with you as a city to fully refine this proposal and get it really sharp to where it's dialed in on your specific preferences. So scrolling down further, Chandler, the next page is just the table of contents. I think we just outline some of the benefits in the summary that we've hit on at a high level here. Dave, do you want to hit on active Ethernet connections versus passive optical network connections at a high level? And because I know that is something that those that are technical might have questions on?
Sure. So the proposal, as it's been delivered, assumes a kind of a hybrid approach with the majority of the connections being done with passive optical networking or PON, and leaving some additional fibers, intentionally designing some excess capacity into the network to allow for some active Ethernet connections, and the architecture of the physical layer of the network is designed to allow a one-to-one relationship between the fiber network and the customer, but utilizing PON network equipment simply because the vast majority of network equipment advancements are taking place in the PON space. The majority of your access equipment vendors are spending all of their research and development dollars on PON architecture. And so features such as, you know, your ability to view certain types of oversight on the network, getting management of oversubscription and viewing the customer connections and having some additional information on how your users are using the network, not specifically which websites are going to or anything like that with privacy, but just having an understanding of the way that bandwidth usage is happening in the network. All of those tools are being developed and around the PON architecture, and so we feel that it's important to allow for both of those network architectures to take place, because there are going to be times when you do have a customer who demands an active Ethernet type of solution where they have their own dedicated circuit. For the vast majority, that's not necessary, and you miss out on some of these other functions when you move to an all active Ethernet platform. So that's kind of what we have described. So the key difference between passive optical networking is just and active Ethernet is that in a passive optical network you have a line terminal or your main serving piece that comes out of your shelter or your hut, and that signal gets split and shared between a certain number of users, and then the PON service is managed and monitored to make sure that the customer doesn't have a blocking experience where there's more bandwidth being demanded of that primary circuit than by those shared users than what is being provided. And so that the customer has a premier experience. And whereas with active Ethernet, you have a one-to-one relationship from start to finish where every port or terminal port in the shelter serves just one customer on the other end. So we see that there's a need for both of those architectures, and therefore the proposal outlines both of those in there.
Yeah, and Mayor and Chamber and other council members, please direct us here to the degree of depth that you want us to get technically on this particular subject. I think the non-technical description of what Dave just said is either solution allows gigabit capable connections and the ability to scale and grow and adapt based on growth in usage and expansion of the network. Those are the things that I think as a mayor or as a city manager or as a city council member that it's important to hear, you know, instead of getting stuck in the technology. Unless you're interested in the technology, either solution gives you the capacity and the scalability that you'll need as a municipality.
And I apologize for diving in too deep if I did. I apologize.
No, you didn't, Dave. I just want to make sure that we're right-sizing the message. So Mayor, is that an appropriate level at this point?
Yes, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Dave, why don't you talk specifically about the construction methodologies that we would use?
Okay. The current proposal, let me back up just a touch. So Strata has an in-house construction team with a significant number of pieces of equipment, heavy equipment, from big D8 plows and 100,000-pound rock saws all the way down to small little trencher, walk-behind trenchers that go in someone's yard. We also have several directional drills, or what people typically call a boring machine. And then we have micro trenching equipment. We have smaller plows and obviously backhoes and mini to large excavators, tracked excavators for doing open trenching and things like that. So The reason I point all of that out is simply because we can modify the way we approach this project based on some of the city's preferences. So if you would prefer a certain type or types of construction methods to be utilized, we can modify the approach and have the experience and the equipment to modify. However, the current proposal as it sits utilizes primarily micro trenching technology and some directional drilling, especially as it relates to getting to the customer's home from the street into the home and getting under people's driveways and sidewalks and flower gardens and things like that. So the micro trenching, I don't know how familiar you are with that technology, but I'll just briefly describe it and we can dive in deeper now or at another time if you would like. But one thing I will say is it should not be confused with nano trenching, which was a very similar technology that had pretty poor results in the field and is fairly well documented with some of the challenges that Google Fiber in specific had with nano trenching in the city of Louisville. If you wanted to Google it, you could read a little bit about some of those. But what we're suggesting is not nano trenching, it's micro trenching, and the difference is depth primarily and the way that you reinstate the road. So the micro trenching process that we use cuts a small trench about an inch and a half wide through the asphalt and down to a depth of 16 inches. And then our engineers design the project so that we never put more product or conduits in the trench that would take up more than 4 inches of vertical space, because we always want to have 12 inches of cover. Sorry, I'm not saying this real well, but we want to have 12 inches of overall cover at all times, which allows the city to do roto milling and repaving jobs and anything beyond, completely rebuilding the subgrade of the road, which typically is going to require utilities to be moved anyway, regardless of that depth. Anything beyond that, or before you get to that, should be able to be handled without interfering with the product. So the trench is cut and put the product in, and then it's filled with flowable fill up to the surface of the road, and then capped with a product that the city gets to specify, but it's typically like a tar crack seal product that you would use for typical crack seal on asphalt. And so what it leaves behind is a very small trench, some scar in the road as compared to like an open trench or something like that, which would leave, 2 or 3 foot wide patch in the road. And the other nice thing about it is that it's extremely clean. There's a vac that's hooked, a big vac trailer that's hooked onto the micro trenching unit itself and vacs all the spoils of the trench out at the time that you're cutting it, leaving behind a clean surface on the road and a clean trench for the conduits to go into. And then you just, as I said, fill it with the flowable fill. And it's also less intrusive to traffic as far as shutting down roads. You can literally drive over the top of it right after the micro trencher has passed through. And even with it not being filled with flowable fill, you can drive right over the top of it. And so if you're going behind someone's driveway, for example, and they need to get out of their driveway, it's literally 1 or 2 minutes that you'll be potentially inconveniencing them, and then they would be able to get in and out of their driveway at that point. So those are some of the reasons, especially in city and suburban type environments, that we prefer to use micro trenching. It's fast. It gets the project done quickly. But like I said, if the city doesn't like the sound of it, if they have concerns and would like us to utilize other methods, we can utilize other construction methods, but the cost may require an adjustment of cost in order to do so.
ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is this in conduit or is it direct lay?
It's all in conduit. So they're micro conduits and we use microfiber. And the biggest challenge with microfiber as compared to like a typical loose tube to standard fiber cable is that it's not shielded. So it doesn't have a metallic sheath for locating. And so we add a separate locate wire in that, in the bottom of the trench so that we can locate the network.
Okay.
So yeah, I think just to review quickly, the tenants, you know, so the city would own the network. We've described that as with ownership comes the potential for the revenues and the margins that are above and beyond the required take rate to break even. You know, we would, Strata's role would be to provide planning, engineering, construction, and then an ongoing network operator, just, you know, facilitating that role also to probably have the city. And so I think with that, Dave, let's just dive into, unless you have specific questions before, but I think we can culminate our presentation with just a quick review of the financial details that we've provided based on some rough inputs. And then from there, we would love to turn it back to you, Mayor, and just address questions or comments or concerns or further direction from you. So.
That would be great. Yes, let's talk about the financial components and then we can open up for questions on anything that we've discussed tonight.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah. Dave, Dave takes the primary role of putting the model together, so I'm going to let him talk about the assumptions that have gone into this model, and then we'll go from there.
Notice how once it gets to the sticky part, Tyler bows out here. He wants
right.
to
come. I'm still here. I've got your back, my friend.
So what we tried to do is provide you with two options, a utility model and a subscription model. And as Tyler said, the inputs can change significantly and change the outputs of the model. On the utility model, what we tried to do is just provide to you an idea of what it would look like if you tried to utilize Strata's option to provide a $45 package to your customers on a utility model, which I believe was offered as one of the options on the Utopia models that were provided to you. And as you can see, the estimated, it looked like those two lines in the middle there of that first section, the estimated requirement for the bond is around $28,000-$29,000, but the estimated utility fee revenue doesn't cover that. And so the challenge then becomes, how do we make up the difference in the subscriber revenue? And what we found as we went through this, and we can work on this with you more if this is somewhere you feel like strongly that you'd like to go. But what we found was that there wasn't any money left for the city on the margin side when customers subscribe to the network, because all of that money was being utilized both for the network operator and for the ISPs in order to promote them to be on the network. Because if you take $45 and you take out the $10 fee, for example, for the utility fee.
If you want, Chandler, if you want to scroll down two pages, this will be a little more reflective of what Dave's talking about right now, right there. Yep. This will give the council and the mayor a better description.
Yeah, so if you have a total, if you look down below those boxes, there's the total monthly subscription cost of $45 for a 250 meg package, for example. If 10 of that is the utility fee, well, that's already accounted for in the $26,000 that we're still short, right? And so then there's a $5 that we recommend that you put aside to refresh the network. As the owner, you're going to need to set some money aside in order to refresh the network on an ongoing basis. We actually recommend that to be more around $7, but I used $5 just to try to make the math line up here. Then that leaves about $20 for the network operator fee, which is Strata's standard network operator fee. And then that only leaves about $10 $10 for the internet service provider, which is going to be a bit of a trick to try to get internet service providers that are willing to come in for $10. There probably are some, but you may or may not be thrilled with the quality of service that they provide, and that's one of the concerns I would have with this particular model. So the point here, I guess, is on the utility model, we would, if the city felt strongly that you wanted to do a utility model, we would probably need to tweak some of the inputs in order to try to provide outputs that would make the project financially reasonable for the city and viable.
Dave, I'm just going to weigh in there. A utility model was presented to us by LightHub in conjunction with another city, and the council can shake their head if I'm wrong on this, but my feeling was that there wasn't a lot of support for that. We were concerned about that option for people who did not necessarily want to use this, and so we were leaning more to a subscriber model.
Okay, and that's great. I apologize for spending time on that one.
I appreciate it.
We're 100% fine with working on a subscriber model. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mayor. I apologize.
No, I was going to say, I appreciate the information. I just want to help you know where we've moved towards because of you, from just the political ramification, you know, trying to force everybody to buy into something. I don't think that any of us are on board with that.
Okay.
Can we skip ahead to the subscription page?
Yeah, let's go back up if we can to the where the two were being compared. Just a little bit further. Yeah, so that shows kind of the subscription model, and basically what this is saying is that we're estimating a cost of around $5.5 million to build the network. Some of those inputs could change, and I'll be honest, they're a little bit conservative because when we provided this proposal, we had been kind of warned that there's some rocky soil conditions in Cedar Hills, and after we do a little bit more investigation, we might be able to address that and, you know, lower these costs a little bit. They're a little bit conservative because of that. I just want to make sure that we're not, you know, providing you with a cost that isn't realistic, and that the network will cost more than that, and therefore the model doesn't pan out for you the way that we're showing it. So it's a little bit conservative at this point, but as I said, we can adjust some of those inputs and try to hone this down to the product that we feel best suits what you're asking for. But anyway, that $5.5 million, and one of the things that you'll notice is that the cost of the subscription model is lower than the utility model, simply because you're not delivering service to every home. You're only passing every home and then hooking up the homes that subscribe. So the cost of actually hooking those up goes down, and therefore the cost of the model goes down. Anyway,
quick question on that, Dave. If that's the case, if somebody decided that they wanted to participate 10 years down the road, would they just pay up front for that connection to their house, or how would that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So really, it depends on how you would like to handle it, because as a city, you own the network, so you'll be able to determine how you want to recover. So Strata will tell you, this is how much we're going to charge you to hook the customers up. You know, in the future, we're going to charge you X amount of money every time we hook somebody up. And then you can choose whether you want to charge them that fee then, or whether you want to, you know, let them pay it to you over a period of 2 years, or just hope that you get it back through subscribers or through your monthly subscription fees, or whether you want to, you know, offer some sort of promotion from time to time to allow people to come on at a lower cost, or, you know, there's all sorts of options there, Mayor. And so I don't mean to be vague in my answer, but there's a lot of flexibility in how you can approach it, because it is your network. You know, similar to what, you know, if somebody wanted to hook onto a water line, you have control over what you charge them to do that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah. And then we estimated the monthly bond payment would be around $23,000, and then kind of came up with what we thought the minimum number of subscribers would need in order to make that monthly bond payment, which was 929, which is about 36% based on the numbers that we had for the city. And we kind of ran through some of those assumptions with Chandler and tried to be as close as we could be there. So a 36% take rate is definitely doable, but it's not, you know, it's not going to be just super easy either. I think it would be something that we would have to be fairly confident that we could meet together, and I think we can. I'm confident that we can, but it's going to require some effort together in order to get to that number. Tyler is the marketing guy. He has probably a better idea of what, you know, what that likelihood would be. But anyway, that's kind of what the model showed that we would need, is kind of a baseline right around that 930 subscriber mark. That assumes several things. One of the things it assumes is that we are going to use, we're going to assume that about 75% of the subscribers are going to choose a 250 meg option instead of a gig option, and 25% of the subscribers will choose a gig option. Obviously, if more subscribers choose to subscribe to the gig option, it drives the revenues upwards and reduces the minimum number of subscribers that are needed to make the bond payment. With that, you can probably scroll down. The next page kind of shows a pro forma. It's pretty fun to look at, but the key on that one would be the piece to the right, which looks like Chandler's going to rotate it for us here.
If it let me. Oh, man, now I've really messed it up.
And I probably should.
Here we go.
Should have rotated it, but...
There you go.
Wanted to make sure we gave you as much page space as possible, but we'll just look at the bottom half of this page, which is the subscription model, since we're not really interested in the model. And you can see that you're taking on some subscribers during a period when you're not making payments to the bond, assuming that there's a 2-year deferred interest period. And so that's why there's some revenues that are ramping up upfront, then it drops in year 4, and then gradually builds again over the next 6 years to year 10. But really, in this model, as it's being shown with the inputs that are in there now, there's really only the 1 year that the city is going to have to subsidize that effort with either funds from the previous year or however you choose to do so. That's a fairly positive pro forma. I thought it looked good when we put it together. I was pretty happy that it looked as good as it did. And then if we go to the next page, then you'll have to rotate again, Chandler. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're good.
Awesome. So this just shows the... thank you. This just shows kind of the breakdown of the cost. And I apologize. I got a monitor over here and a monitor here, so I'm trying to look and make sure I'm looking at everything that you're looking at. This just shows, you know, your baseline fee at the bottom would be $65 for a 250 meg package and $75 for a gig package. So an example of a place where we could tweak it, if the city council said, we really want those to be $60 and $70 instead. I'm just making these numbers up. But if the city said, you know, we really would rather have those fees be $60 and $70 instead of $65 and $70. We could go through and plug that in and update the pro forma and give you an idea of what that does to the model. Because obviously the revenues are reduced, and so it would impact the model. We'd be happy to do that if you kind of had an idea of where you wanted it to land. But as it sits now, what's in the model is a $65 250 meg package and a $75 gig package. You can kind of see the way it breaks out. So the citizen or the subscriber would receive two bills, one from the city for $52 on the 250 meg package or $57 on the gig package, and then another bill from the ISP for whatever price they chose to bill. And that's what that asterisk says. The ISP will ultimately determine that fee, but at least one ISP is committed to that pricing structure. So you know for sure it's not going to be more money than that amount, but it could be even better. Some ISPs might come in and offer to do it for less. So that kind of gives you an idea of the way that the fee breaks out. The city infrastructure fee is really kind of where you can make your payment to your bond. And then the $7 network refresh fee is just it's really not a fee. It's more of an allocation of funds that we recommend that you set that money aside so that you can maintain your network over time. And as the network operator, then Strata would come to you every year and say, these are the upgrades that we feel are necessary to the network. These are the reasons why. And City Council would either approve or not approve and ask for a modification. Once we came up with what the budget was, it would be anticipated that that would be covered from that network refresh fund, and you know, put it in an escrow or however you want to manage it. And then Strata's fee is the $20 per month. I think everything else I've discussed. Any questions on the fee structure or how that works? Okay. I think that's it for me, Tyler, if you want to...
Yeah, I think Mayor, being sensitive to the time allotment, I think we've got 13 or 14 minutes, and we want to make sure that at this point we're responsive, or at least give you a chance to respond as a council and let us know your feelings and questions and concerns.
Thank you. How many ISPs do you currently have with your network?
So Strata is also an ISP, like we discussed, and we would act, as Dave indicated on this particular slide, we would act as a fallback ISP to culminate or to complete this offering if needed. But we don't have a specific number of ISPs yet. We're working on this model with several other municipalities, and we're not ready to publicly announce all of those ISPs at this point.
Council, I'm going to open it up to questions.
I have a question on time frame. Do you have like an estimate of how long you think it would take to install all the conduit throughout the city?
Yeah, this model. Oh, sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Tyler.
In this model, we used a 24-month construction period.
Looking for Ben because he is our expert in this, so I thought he would have a list of questions ready.
Well, no, it kind of checked all the basic boxes I've got. It's when you dig into the details that I would have some questions. I believe what you were talking about when you were talking about the dedicated lines, that would be something that would support something like AWS Direct Connect, if we wanted to do that sort of VPN service to a cloud for any city networks.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, you can do that. Actually, you can still utilize PON technology to do that. It's just a matter of whether the oversubscription to the network is something that you're comfortable with. But you can use either of those services, but the direct active Ethernet connection would give you the confidence that you would not have a blocking network for that circuit size.
Yeah, I don't see it would be an edge case in my opinion if we were to look at that. That's just a VPN solution for data security purposes. No, I everything here looks pretty straightforward to me.
One thing I'll mention, just in that regard. So we actually serve a lot of cell sites, cell towers throughout the Uinta Basin and other areas as well. And we typically use PON to serve those, but we just do it in a 1-to-1 or 1-to-2 relationship. We just don't split it. And the reason is just because of all those tools that I mentioned before that are being developed for PON architectures that are not being developed for active Ethernet. So we treat it similarly physically to an active Ethernet connection, but we still use PON equipment in order to gain access to some of those bandwidth management tools and some of those things like that. So but we do have active Ethernet circuits that we provide for those solutions as well. It just kind of depends on the specific need. So I apologize, but there's a lot of flexibility, I guess.
One other thing I was was thinking of is the, I don't recall seeing it through the proposal, but the location of the network operations center. Typically, you know, a service like this would have two for redundancy. What does your network operations center or NOC look like?
Yeah, I apologize. I should have mentioned that. But when I stated NOC on our introduction singular, we do actually have our NOC presence and personnel in two different physical locations, one in Myrtle and one here in Roseville. I've got, I'll find him and send him to Chandler and he can distribute them to the council. But I've got several different videos and media assets that kind of outline the NOC that we have here, and I can distribute those to Chandler and he can get it to you guys as well.
Okay. That's really all I had. Service wise, it looks like it would be sufficient to meet the needs of residential customers. I saw the business option, so it looks like it checks all the boxes in general from what we've heard from our residences.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Miller or Dennis or Smith?
I don't have anything to add.
I don't either, Mayor. Sorry, okay. I'm having trouble with my video.
You're okay. Councilmember Anderson, I know you asked a question. Did you have any additional questions? Nothing. Okay. And Councilmember Guinness?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
They are.
Okay. Yeah, no, I don't have anything to add. I'm just taking it all in.
Okay.
Mayor, I have a number of questions going through the RFP, but in the interest of time, what I'm going to do is I will email Dave and Tyler my questions and send those responses out to the council when I get them.
Okay, that would be great. And then Dave and Tyler, I don't know if you were aware, but our process, I'm sure Chandler discussed this with you, our next steps are to send out an RFP so that we can receive responses from anyone who's interested in providing this type of service to our city, and then we will go over those RFPs as a council. I don't think we have a timeline set for that as of yet. We're pretty close on the RFP being finished.
Yeah,
sounds good. I think for us, we just wanted to be sure we got you this proposal during that time when the RFP was being prepared so that you could understand some of the options that are available to you as you prepare it. And hopefully that's been beneficial. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to take some time. We know we've taken a lot of your time tonight, so we really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate the presentation and answering our questions and sending this over. That's very helpful as we are putting the RFP together to make sure that we are asking all the right questions and that we know what all our options are. So thank you.
Yes,
I'm sure we'll be reaching out again soon.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate it. Thank you, Chandler and council members.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, just looking at the agenda, I don't see anything else on the work session agenda. We've got about 6 minutes before council meeting starts. Council, do you want a quick break, or do you want to discuss something on the agenda for the next 6 minutes? I think it's the same Zoom link, isn't it?
I have to close this meeting and then open a new one.
Okay, well then let's do that. Let's just go ahead and close this meeting and then we will reconvene at 7 o'clock with the council link. So if somebody would like to make a motion to adjourn work session.
I will make a motion that we adjourn work session.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second, I can.
Seconded by Councilmember Geddes, I think it was. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we will resume here in about 5 minutes.